Welcome to the Earned First podcast. This is Arun Sudharman, and I'm recording this at the 2025 Cannes Lions Festival. And I'm really happy to be recording this podcast in partnership with Zeno. And I'm joined today by Barbie Siegel, the CEO of Zeno Group, and Thomas Bunn, who's the Chief Client Impact Officer. So, Barbie and Thomas, first of all, welcome to the podcast. How's your week so far going in Cannes?
Great. It's great to be here. We're so happy with your new venture and delighted to, I think, be your maybe first podcast here at Cannes.
Yeah, you are the first and I mean, basically the only podcast.
Well, that's how we like it. It's Wednesday morning, so we've gotten to go to some sessions and see some people speak. There's, you know, I think incredible energy and inspiration all around. Some common themes are starting to emerge. We've been spending time with clients and doing some of our own presentations. So it's been great. We already have a notebook filled with all kinds of notes and ideas to bring back to our teams and our clients.
So before we get into some of the trends and drivers in terms of Zeno's approach and its work, you are approaching the end of your fiscal year. Tell us how Zeno's performing. It's not been easy out there, I don't think, for any agency. How has the last 12 months been for you, and how are you feeling as you head into the next fiscal year?
So this is always an exciting time of year for us. We are in the last month of our fiscal, and I am happy to share with you that while last year we were flat, this year we are growing. So we have returned to growth, which is exciting. It has been a challenging year for many reasons, both in terms of the issues that our clients have faced, all the external forces that are impacting all of us just as human beings. But I do have to say it has been exhilarating because we are finding ourselves working in the trenches with our clients on such a variety of complex problems using new tools and approaches. One of the things I have said to my team, and I will say again as we ring in our fiscal year, is that the playbook that got us here is not the playbook that's going to take us forward. I think this is all about evolution and experimentation, and we, Zeno, for many reasons, have the freedom to do that. So we will go into the new year with optimism and energy. We're not perfect. We will address some of our own challenges, but we're also very focused on the clients, making sure that we are seeing their needs today and anticipating their needs tomorrow. I think the environment that we're in now, there are many agencies out there that are focusing on other matters. We remain laser focused on our clients and doing work that really matters and has an impact, which is why I'm so happy to be sitting here with Thomas Bunn, who actually July 1 will mark 1 year as our Chief Client Impact Officer. And that word impact is so important because that is really the core of our strategy.
Yeah, sure. So, and presumably that ties back to the growth that you're reporting. Let's be clear. I don't think many agencies are growing in this environment. As you mentioned, many of them are focused on internal issues rather than necessarily external ones. So Thomas, if I come to you, how do you see your role in terms of not just delivering impact for clients, but how is it kind of helping the agency in general deliver better performance?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel that, as Bobby said, you can't just get stuck in your ways and your models. We really have to think about progress and how to advance. And we really felt that our clients were getting very anxious in terms of trying to figure out what's coming next and you know, predicting things and being prepared and figure out how to pivot quickly. So we decided that in order to best meet those shifting needs, we needed to really rethink the way we were, you know, constructing our teams. So we actually made the deliberate decision to really kind of put data and intelligence, to put strategy and planning and creative right at the heart of every client piece of business, to give them access in real time to, you know, deep expertise and deep talent. It creates obviously efficiencies for clients, but also a lot of agility, a lot of speed, and just a lot of really good, smart thinking that our clients require of us. So again, I think it's really helpful to take those layers away. I think in the communications industry, I would say we've kind of been, you know, bogged down a little bit by that kind of heavy account management structure. I think we want to really kind of move away from that and really just make sure that, you know, clients were getting the best and that we were just really reinvesting some of our resources into really exciting talent, really exciting technology, and really exciting solutions.
You've been around agencies a long time, and I always talk about the hand. You know, the account people would give the hand to the data people or the strategists or the creative and say, we'll call you when we need you. Well, that doesn't work. It needs to be, clients want the data and the strategy every single day. So by starting with creative strategy and data intelligence right at the core, and then we partner with terrific client leaders who bring both communications expertise and that really important business acumen, my two favorite words. And then we go one step further and we partner quite a bit with our earned media team, with our digital team to bring all of that to life. But the data, the strategy, the creative, for the most part, are embedded into the business every day versus being episodic in and out. You can't do your best work when you're just jumping in and out.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I think we are somewhat uniquely positioned to have been able to do this because of our collaborative spirit, but also our size and our ability to not get bogged down in bureaucracy, but really get bogged down in what's right for the clients.
You don't have to worry, I think, so much, I would imagine, about some of the more financial decisions, I think, that underpin how some agencies are structured, right? You're delivering a structure that's perhaps working best for your clients. And I think it sounds like that's delivering results that are, you know, ahead of the market.
I will say it's working well for us in terms of it's helping our financial picture as well, because we're bringing the right people. And as Thomas said, we're not overblowing the teams with layers of account management that we really don't need. The clients want the experts, partner them with client leaders, use project management to move workflows forward.
Yeah.
In some instances, it's reduced over service, but it's making us tighter, more efficient, and, you know, more really fit for the future. And the clients that I know I've spoken to really appreciate the fact that we're not coming to a phone call now with 10 people and they don't know what they do.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to have a specific role. And in some instances, less is more. It's tighter, it's more focused, it's more strategic.
And to that point, I mean, project management isn't the sexiest term, but in our industry, we haven't had it very prominently. And actually, it's kind of been our Trojan horse in terms of getting those project managers into the business and really looking at the resources. Do we have the right people to do the right job? And really kind of building the team from the ground up versus just taking your average comms team and then figuring out what you bolt on, as Bobby said. That's been really fascinating. And it, you know, requires us to be very rigorous and intentional about how we staff teams. But again, I think it's really been really, really helpful. And it's helped us, you know, break bad habits that a lot of agencies just carry through over the years. And we didn't want to have to deal with that.
Yeah, it sounds more project focused, which I guess is a bit of a shift, right, in terms of how agencies have traditionally been structured. It also sounds like a reasonably fundamental restructuring of the agency in general. Has it been difficult to accomplish this in terms of getting people to work in a different way? And what have you learned, I guess, from this whole process?
I think it's a mindset shift overall. I think that was the biggest piece to help them understand and really kind of educate them on that fact that we are the C word, right? We are kind of consultants. We really are. You know, they're coming to us with problems and challenges have really changed over the last few years. It wasn't just, you know, get me more awareness, drive coverage, all those more kind of like, you know, kind of output-based assignments, you feel like outcomes, and it comes to really, really heavy, complex challenges. And they're like, how do we solve this? And maybe communications isn't always the solution, right? There might be other things we have to pull in. But if you're built that way and you have that mindset and really training our business and client leaders to think differently, it just means they're better equipped to bring in the right resources to solve those challenges, you know, better, more predictive intelligence, deep strategy, and then really good, quick, agile, creative solutions. I think once people saw the impact. And we didn't overtly like tell clients we're changing the whole team. It just kind of happened. We implemented it gradually, and then clients started to see the effects. And they're like, wow, it's great to have a project manager. Like, you guys are on point all the time. It's effective. Yeah. You know, I have access to strategists now in the room all the time when I need them. I don't have to ask the, you know, business lead or account lead to facilitate a meeting. And it just makes a real, real big difference.
And we're still rolling it out. You know, of course, the US is our biggest region. Europe and Asia Pacific have different needs, but the model is adaptable. And in fiscal 26, we're going to focus on turning the model into our global operating system that will cut across the whole agency. It is adaptable to set it up in slightly different ways, depending on this. You know, for the biggest clients, it's one approach. For clients that are slightly smaller, but as Thomas said, it really is that mindset. Again, it goes back to, we need the data, we need the insights, we need the strategy. Once you have that, you can go anywhere.
Sure.
And, you know, sitting here at Cannes, you see all the Lions winners start with an amazing insight.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been some really interesting work from Xenon that I've seen, in particular, the usage of AI avatars in some of the campaigns for Lenovo, which I think had not only won awards, but have also been, you know, effective campaigns on behalf of the client. And also, they display, I think, a kind of cultural intelligence about what's going on in the world and the role that companies and brands can play in terms of helping people. So if we talk a little bit about the work, Barbie, how do you see the difference, I think, between brands that, you know, react to cultural moments versus those that are actually able to anticipate them?
You know, I think culture is the one of the words here at Cannes this week. Everybody's talking about brands and culture, and what we talk about, and we did some recent research that Thomas can take you through, is culture really is a strategy, is how do you insert and connect your brands to culture that then is going to be connected to the audience you want to reach. We talk a lot about, it's one thing to react. I think if you react, you're probably too late. I think what we've really been focused on is how do we get into something before it's really a thing. And we have some of our AI tools that are helping us do that. I mean, Kraft Heinz is a client. They do a magnificent job of putting their iconic household brands, Heinz ketchup, mustard, into culture, finding those moments. But the key, and what they do so brilliantly, is it aligns to a bigger business strategy. It's not, oh, we're just going to jump in and out because it's fun. That is a big part of our brand work, certainly. Not as much in the corporate reputation space, although even when we're working on corporate assignments, you do want to look for the conversations that you can tap into or lead. So I think the strategy is the same about being in the conversations where, so you can meet your audiences in different places.
And to that point, it's very easy to chase the latest cultural moment and trend. We know that TikTok trends can last 5 minutes, 5 days, 5 weeks, right? But as Barbie said, it's having that kind of culture first strategy throughout and really understanding how it ties your brand strategy. Yeah. And we always say that that's kind of a difference between kind of, you know, earning attention and earning affection, right? Brand should be earning affection, right? Because you're remembered today, forgotten tomorrow. And if you want to build business and get people to keep coming back to your brand and buy more products and really anticipate your products and want to stick with you through the thick and thin, you need to make sure that you are not just doing sporadic type kind of cultural things. And that's why the anticipation becomes important, because it's exhausting to chase the latest trend, right? You have to try and get ahead of the narrative, put a point of view forward as quickly as we can, just again, to make more of an impact.
But you also need a framework for anticipating. You need to know what you're looking for and why.
Yeah.
And you need to have, we talk to our clients about this all the time, we need to have a filter that says, is this right for our brand or not? Not every cultural moment is right for every brand.
Absolutely.
But if you know who you are as a brand and where you're going, then it becomes a little bit easier to say yes to this and no to that.
So come back to culture in a moment, but I wanted to ask about the AI Hive.
Our favorites.
Yeah. So I took a look at that, and it looks very interesting. So I assume, Thomas, you want to answer this, but of course, Barbie, if you want to as well.
So I love it, but I like Ben to talk about it.
It identifies unknown unknowns, right? So tell us how this kind of predicted intelligence is changing your, you know, the creative strategy of your deploying.
Well, absolutely. So just to start, the Hive kind of mindset has been a Zeno signature for many years. This isn't a completely new thing. We've always been pretty good as an agency at inserting ourselves into cultural moments. But as we just said, that's no longer enough. You need to kind of get ahead of the narrative and the trending topics and put your point of view out there. So we really kind of went on a journey to get, you know, better technology, explore better tools, build our own things internally to connect all the dots, right? AI agents, et cetera, to really make sure that we were getting ahead of things better and more effectively. So the idea really here is using all of that data to understand, you know, what is percolating when it's in the depths of the deep web, right? It's really like starting to happen, and then making an assessment with clients about, is it right to engage from a brand perspective, but also at what point we engage and with what kind of content. So this solution is clients love it because, again, not only do we say to them, watch this small thing happening, but then we're also able to basically tell them when it's appropriate to do it and put get them in it at the right time to get ahead of it. So, you know, it requires a certain type of team to do it. It's not just a tool or a technology. We always say that. We have, obviously, data and intelligence are kind of the front lines of mining for those kind of predictive insights. And then our strategy team turns those into like a really interesting kind of a piece of quick strategy that gets turned into creative. And again, AI is woven throughout, right? So it's not just for the mining for the intelligence and analyzing it, but AI also to look at, you know, creative options, right? Straight from the strategy there quickly. Then with always humans in the loop, we very important to keep that kind of quality level. But that's what's really exciting about this. Again, it's about speed and agility. And I think so many people say, oh, we do predictive. This really is predictive, right? So yeah, no, it's great. And, you know, we've used a lot with our kind of, you know, kind of more brand clients because they're the ones who want to be more culture forward usually and grab that attention and try and turn it into a kind of sales opportunity. But we're seeing, you know,
a more opportunity for the client.
For the client, obviously. Yeah. But we're seeing, again, more and more opportunities even in other spaces like potentially healthcare or corporates to do the same kind of thing because the framework is built, the technology is there, just how we use it.
And as we go ahead into our new fiscal, we do have a 2.0 version coming.
Okay.
But we are, I'm not allowed to say anything, but we are very excited about having it be a real differentiator. But again, taking the core of what the strategy of the Hive is, the AI that we currently have, and now taking it to the next level.
Yeah. Do you ever find it's a challenge speaking to clients and perhaps persuading them that it's a bigger risk to not be involved in a conversation?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Look, I think we have to build safety into everything that we do. And one thing with AI, which is amazing, is synthetic audiences. So one thing that we do is that we find something really interesting and we want to test an idea. We test it in minutes with synthetic audiences so we can get a real initial read on how people feel about the idea, whether they're going to get behind it, or they're nervous about it. So there's an element of also reassuring clients that we're not going to be completely reckless and just jump onto any cultural trend, but really just thinking through again, you know, does it make sense for the brand? You know, is it worth, you know, some type of risk? And then kind of make a decision from there. But that's again, why it's so exciting and such exciting times right now. Is that before, when we used to have a Hive idea and the client wasn't too sure, we could turn around a survey in like 48 hours and get a reading. And you know the speed of the internet, but then the moment's gone. So I love that we can actually do some of that kind of validation work in real time as well now.
And I think what we always talk about, Arun, is that we operate at the intersection of brand and corporate reputation. So what Thomas was talking about in terms of safety, even when we're working on mustard for Kraft Heinz or a Hershey product, we do always have to think about the implication and game out what a corporate reputation risk might be. Mm-hmm. And I think our doing that helps our clients feel more comfortable in going forward or not.
Mm. So you mentioned earlier that, you know, when companies, brands are trying to get involved in culture, it has to align with their brand strategy overall, which makes a lot of sense. But do you find that you potentially are also having to persuade companies that, you know, this is a long-term commitment to communities? And maybe that doesn't always involve, you know, an activation for quite a long time. You know, if companies really want to be part of culture and communities, I assume a lot of the time they're just listening and learning. Is that a challenge at all in terms of getting them perhaps to say less, listen more? Are they acting inappropriate?
And that's what we discuss with them. We're going to keep thinking, keep watching, keep listening, but we're not going to jump into everything. And we may jump into some things that don't really catch fire, as it were, right? But I think that's part of the journey. But you're right, it is a long-term strategy. And also, the world is so fragmented today. Mm-hmm. It's rare to have like a mass culture moment, mm-hmm. right? We are looking at, for example, we did something with Capri Sun for Kraft Heinz, and there was a really interesting thing. I think from the exact origin, it was something on the lines that someone went to a trade show and saw that the pouch that some was not there, or there was another type of format for the packaging. And, you know, the Capri Sun juice pouch is iconic. People love it. Yeah. So there was this kind of fear conversation start in the depths of Reddit around, yeah. Oh my God, I think they're taking rid of the pouch. So we jumped on that moment straight away. And that made real sense for them, because it was like leaning into brand love that was already there. And we created this really simple kind of cultural moment, which was basically you could buy this whole palette mm-hmm. of Capri Suns. And the retailers got so into it that they got in on it as well within, you know, a couple of days. So we had this really amazing connection between an amazing little insight around, you know, that kind of, that came out of that kind of love for the brand, mm-hmm. and then worked really quickly with the comms team, with the retail marketing team, with the retailer to come up with a solution within a few days that got obviously so much media coverage, but also really helped again build a relationship with the customer, with the consumer. And that's what's so important to it. It's not just about awareness. Communications, we have to deliver business impact. It can't just be, oh, you got talked about. Sure. We love to be able to say to the client, yes, you got talked about, but look, you know, that massive retailer loves you even more now, because people were, you know, running into the store buying massive pallets of a beverage, right? How often does that happen? So that's really interesting for us. It's kind of, again, back to that strategy, is helping that you get used to the process, but then also seeing that it has so much more potential beyond just, you know, that kind of snazzy moment in media.
I will say that the question about listening, I think, is really important given the world in which we're living and lots of change. Everybody is a content producer. You know, we used to say one tweet and your brand can be in a lot of trouble. And so as much as we are watching for the next opportunity, we are also listening on behalf of our clients. And something we talk about inside Zeno is making sure that built into everything is that pause. Mm. Just pause for a moment to just make sure that we have all of everything checked, all the bases, and that we really are listening all the voices and forces that are around us. Because I think this is a time like none other in terms of the conversations that are happening, political divisiveness, incredible attention to the right words and the right images. We have seen brands get into lots of trouble mm-hmm. for not having the right words, not having the right image. So mm-hmm. we really emphasize to our teams that there does come those moments when you just have to stop and think and pause and say, okay, is this really right? Is this mm-hmm. brand right? Are we hearing everything that's going around us? And would we be better off not taking advantage of something that seems like it could be good, but maybe too much risk or not right for the times.
Yeah.
So it is that balancing act, again, the great brand building and the risk analysis.
And that's interesting, because I was going to ask you, is there still a role for, you know, human cultural intuition? We've talked a lot about data and technology, but from what you've just said there, I mean, that's a very human aspect, right?
I was just reading an article earlier in one of the Cannes mm-hmm. recaps about the fact that human intuition is not something, mm-hmm. at least today, and I don't know about the future, that you can get from AI. Mm-hmm. We, you know, people are saying AI is a collaborator. Mm-hmm. People are saying AI gives you the spark. Yes to all of that. But at least for now, it needs that human input and that critical strategic thinking, and only the empathy instinct that we can bring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And people talk about, oh, AI is going to take all of our jobs. And I know there's lots of data and lots of conversation, but we're people, we're human beings. I would hate to think that we're going to lose that. What's so great about AI is that it gives you that start. It gives you a place. And then particularly to our younger people, we say, you may not need to do those tasks that some of us had to do when we were coming up. That's great. Mm-hmm. Now you can go right to sharpening your strategic mind and your critical thinking and do that really fun stuff about taking an idea and making it better.
So we've got a few minutes left. Let me ask, are there any specific cultural undercurrents that you're tracking or that you've identified or you've unearthed that brands should be aware of and should be ready for now?
I mean, I think the polarization piece is still continuing so much, which means that everything's so fragmented. I think the question we get a lot is like, am I trying to still target large audiences, or should I just go really kind of micro niche audience and cultural? And again, from a marketing perspective, that does feel expensive, but obviously there is technology now to help with that. So I think that's one of the things that I'm kind of looking at. I think, you know, obviously there's so much disruption with the platforms. I think there's things like creator fatigue. There's all these things that we're watching kind of all the time. I think what I learned yesterday from a session that was so interesting to me is the idea that like joy and optimism are so important. Mm-hmm. I think that's going on. I know that sounds so basic, but I think we forget, as communications, we're very focused on corporate reputation and protection, which is absolutely critical. But yeah. On the other side of it, how can we be a discipline that brings joy, fun and entertainment to things? And then the other things that I kind of picked up from this last few days in Cannes was the debate around purpose, right? It's been really hard. It was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, we all talked about D&I and we were talking about sustainability and it became such priorities. We know that in the US and other countries around the world with the rise of nationalism and other sentiments, that all of that has kind of taken a back seat. It was interesting what I saw yesterday was the big issue that seems to be more and more prevalent is women's issues, which I thought was really interesting and encouraging. So just something again to think about, keep watching those shifts, keep tracking. And again, we're lucky at Zeno, we have amazing, vast research resources, and obviously plus our data analytics resources to again get ahead of all of these things. And I've never seen such importance placed in my career on quality intelligence. Mm-hmm. I mean, some clients think we'll just be happy with like, just keep feeding us intelligence, like, and a strategic point of view, but sometimes like, we don't even need to execute against it. We just rely on you so much to really be watching, looking, understanding, digesting. And I think that's the real value of communicators today as well, is we just have a different understanding of those conversations, the different topics. I love my kind of advertising and creative brothers and sisters, but they don't have that nuanced understanding that we have. And to this day, they still try and understand. And I've been in many meetings with partner agencies on huge brands, and, you know, they pitch an idea and you just like, you know, you had that moment of like, I can't even believe this is happening right now because of what's going on in the world. Or they haven't even asked the client about their business. Right. We know, for example, maybe there's 20% of the staff being laid off, and we have the agency go in saying, can you increase our budgets by 40% so we could do X, Y, Z? And I'm thinking, you're not reading that, because we do, right? We consume the news, we understand it, we look at risks, we look at challenges, they don't, right? So for me, there's been an interesting shift there. And I think some of our clients come to us now, again, for much more integrated work. I think because of that understanding, it takes away that pressure of having to have those conversations, because we are watching, we're understanding, we know what's coming around the corner. So maybe our creative ideas might be a little bit more effective at the end of the day, but we'll see, you know.
I would just add that, you know, something we've been hearing for months is there is uncertainty. And there are people who are feeling uncertain about business, uncertain about their own identity. And so I think there is a role for brands to play in terms of, to Thomas's point, making sure people see that brands get them, and there is that sense of making them feel safe and comfortable. And I would say, even in terms of, you know, the agency overall and our clients, making sure we're taking care of our people inside as well. These are challenging times. I'm a very optimistic person, and we do need to go forward with optimism and the belief that we can be part of change and positivity towards something better. But I think Thomas made the good point. We absolutely have to be aware that people are feeling uncertain. I think from a brand and client perspective, being in the community, being where people are living and working and playing is really important. I always say that you can't sit here in the south of France or in New York City and really understand what's happening to farmers in the United States or work people in London. I mean, so really getting back to yesterday, we were at a panel and Richard said the importance of CEOs being out and being with their workers and going to the plants. And I believe that. I think we all have a role to play in just meeting people where they are, literally and figuratively.
And I think it's nice to end on, you know, something of an optimistic note. So thank you both, Bobby and Thomas, for your time today. And I hope the rest of the week goes well for you and you find even more to be optimistic about.
Thank you. It was great to see you.
Nice to see you too.
See you in Singapore.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.